What does Australia's next generation of young leaders have to say about the future of India-Australia relations in a post-COVID world? And how do Indian scholars, scientists, practitioners, and students factor in? You're listening to Shared Visions, the podcast that spotlights the Australian government's new Colombo plan and gets to the heart of these questions. Today, we have Kimberly Bates, a communication specialist at the Humanitarian Affairs Asia, in conversation with Dr. Purnima Gauri, a neurologist, mental health professional, and the director of Niche Advocacy Foundation. They met while Kimberly was working in India.
Thank you. Thank you both for taking the time to speak to me and to discuss this really exciting program. I would love to hear from each of you a little bit about what you do and how you first met working in India under the NCP program.
So currently I'm completing my honours in psychological science in Australia. And I'm also serving as a campus director for the Millennium Fellowship that's partnered with the United Nations Academic Impact. So helping to empower young people to initiate projects for social impact under the UN SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. Regarding how I kind of came to be in contact with the lovely people that I've been able to meet in India was I'd actually just finished attending an event at the UN in Thailand, which was called the Peace Summit of Emerging Leaders. And I knew that I had a week left of my study in Hong Kong, which was one of the components of the new Colombo plan. And I decided I wanted to just go somewhere in the world. And I started asking myself, where would I like to go? And I thought, oh, I don't know why, just something just strongly resonated with me and said, let's go to India. And so it was through kind of looking through opportunities that I had seen one for Summer Pan Awareness Foundation, tapping into UN SDG 3, if I recall, good health and well-being. But one of the things that stood out to me was the kind of practical experience gained from the point of psychology and neurology. So that's kind of how that journey started for me.
So I'm a neurologist. At that time, I was based in Nagpur. I'm Dr. Purnima. Right now, I'm in Pune. So in Nagpur, I was running this NGO called Samarpan Awareness Foundation. And me being a neurologist, I also work in the field of mental health. And we had just reached out to ISAC and we had opened our doors to international interns. And we were prepared for having our interns 4 months later or 6 months later, and we thought there's going to be a waiting list and everything. And suddenly we had this information that Kimberly is going to be with us. And so we were very eager, we were very excited that Kimberly will be with us. And I was fascinated that she was doing her studies in psychology and criminology. So it was an unusual combination. So we were eager to meet her, and then she came and worked with us. And we are an impact-centric NGO. Currently in Pune, we have reinvented ourselves as Niche Advocacy Foundation. And so we work for impact in the field of mental health. And our work is through our interns, because we feel that you learn more when you work in that field. If you're just a participant, you just listen to it and then you might outgrow what you learned or something. So instead of that, we want people to work. And Kimberly was fantastic in her work. In fact, I would say that I would have been a mentor to her, but I learned a lot of things from her as well. And that is what I find great about these exchange programs, because you exchange cultures, you exchange ideas, you exchange philosophies of work as well, your work culture also. So basically, we are an NGO working in mental health in the context of neurology.
Got it. That's amazing, and I totally agree with what you said about the power of exchange programs in this sense. I think especially these days, regardless of whatever discipline that we all work in, whether it's any kind of research or humanities or writing or art, it's very important to facilitate these cross-cultural exchanges. So that's really good to hear.
Dr. Purnima, I'm curious about your background in neurology and how that informed your work in mental health in India. I think as an Indian resident, I think the conversations around mental health, personally, I feel like they still have a bit of a way to go So I was wondering kind of what your perspective is as a neurologist in this country and working in mental health.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Ronak. It's a very, very important question.
Yeah.
My core training is in neurology, and in neurology, we are trained to diagnose and treat disorders of the brain and the nervous system. For example, epilepsy, headaches like migraines, strokes, spinal cord disorders, neuropathies, myelopathies, myopathies, Parkinson's disease, dementia. So technically, I'm dealing with the hardware of the nervous system, and mental health comes somewhere in the realm of the software of the nervous system. When I have started working in the field of mental health, people wonder that why being a neurologist, I'm working in mental health. It is actually the work of psychiatrists and psychologists. In India, we have a lot of gray zones. We have a lot of overlapping things in India. For example, education and health services. So education should have taken care of this mental health thing, but it cannot because we are target-driven, marks-driven. And health system is busy with managing diseases. So then who looks after preventive health? So we decided now in my OPD, if you take a typical day, a youngster walks in, a college-going kid walks in, and he has vertigo. He has vertigo much early for his age. Or he has insomnia much, much early for his age. Mm. And after he goes away, an old man walks in with his young daughter, and that old man, that 75-year-old, has got dementia. And I look at him, I assess him, and I see his tired daughter. And I realize that what about her? She is exhausted. She has her own set of problems, and she has to look after this old man and his dementia. So what about the caregiver? So that set me off wondering about the caregivers. And when I look at the dementia patient, I also see when we assess patients, we see what is called as their pre-morbid personality. So when I connect the dots, I realize ki this 19-year-old was here some time ago, and what will happen to him when he becomes a 70-year-old? In the minds of the youth, that they need to work on their emotional fitness and mental health. Now, when you say mental health, people immediately start thinking about, you know, schizophrenia and major depression and
right.
suicide and everything.
Right.
But there is a large field of mental health which is in the realm of prevention. Hmm. Even I need a therapist, you need a therapist, we all need therapists. In the sense, we need guides to choose and make the right decision. Working in mental health is extremely essential right now. It's one of the basic essential services, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, definitely. And I would want to ask, Dr. Purnima, you did a fellowship in Australia. Could you talk a little bit about how that experience was, and if that how that informed your work, if it did?
Australia, I worked in Royal Melbourne Hospital under the team of Dr. Terence O'Brien. So that was a very good learning experience for me in Australia, and the team was very nice and a beautiful work culture in Australia, I would say, in Royal Melbourne Hospital.
So, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, since both of you are professionals in this field and you've worked together in India, but also now, Dr. Purnima, you work in India, Ms. Bates, you work in Australia. How do you see us moving forward in this field collaboratively between India and Australia? Like what kind of avenues do you think are there to explore in terms of both countries working together?
For me, my opportunity was invaluable, and it's still something that really challenges my perspective on how I would approach mental health today. I think to appropriately answer that question, you kind of have to consider the current climate at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, suddenly, because of what's happened, mental health's come to the forefront. So it's kind of that paradox of having, you know, being during these challenging times, having something like conversations around mental health start to come to the forefront. And, you know, and we're seeing resourcefulness. People are finding ways to adapt to the situation and still have experiences. So currently under the Millennium Fellowship, which is partnered with the United Nations Academic Impact, you know, I have fellows within Australia, and we can consult fellows with India, and we all have a common goal. It's to initiate, you know, social impact projects on mental health, on, you know, access to education, addressing issues on, you know, sustainability and climate change. And these are all, you know, really important and pressing issues. And we found that, you know, we're just adapting to the current climate, but the passion stays, it never goes away. So
right, that's great to hear. Ms. Bates, I wanted to ask you about your experience a little bit, actually, because as I understand, this was your first time in India, as you mentioned. And I think working in the mental health space can be challenging, regardless of where you would choose to do that, whichever country you would choose to work in. But I think especially so because of what Dr. Purnima mentioned in India, which is quite a complex new culture, especially for, you know, a researcher or a scientist coming in from Australia. So I just wanted to ask, you know, kind of what was your motivation, and generally, if you wanted to talk a little bit about your experience, which I understand was quite a nice, you know, intimate, familial sort of experience that allowed you to kind of settle in and immerse yourself into being here.
You know, again, I kind of went in with, I mean, I'd like to say an open mind, but still I kind of had this idea of, okay, maybe I'll get this kind of experience in psychology, and it ended up exceeding my expectations firstly, but in other ways it was very challenging. So over the years, you know, especially because of the new Colombo plan, I've kind of gone in with the idea that we can't just stay in our profession without having some kind of cross-cultural sensitivity. It's extremely important. Australia is an extremely multicultural nation. So it's extremely important to be culturally aware. And so going to India for the first time, I mean, for me, I would love to go back, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, waiting for an opportunity where I could go back. And Nagpur, of all places, is not, you know, Mumbai or Goa or Delhi. It's not, you know, kind of where people would go. You know, from a tourist kind of point of
right,
view.
Right.
But for me, I kind of, I found the most kind of important part was just the learning. It was so constant, and that in a sense was quite challenging. So, you know, mental health hospitals and, you know, the process of formulating a diagnosis or following up with patients, it's very different in Australia compared to India. So I was very lucky to Dr. Purnima was amazing and set up an extra opportunity for me to go and intern at one of the mental health hospitals, Lata Mangeshkar Hospital, I hope I said that right, in the Department of Psychiatry. And I was just taken aback by how incredibly efficient the psychiatrists need to be. You know, largely because of things like population demands, they don't have the luxury of like 30 minutes to an hour to sit down with a patient each time and delve through, you know, medical history and that kind of thing. They have to work so efficiently. And I remember those days in particular, I just couldn't keep up. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just so amazed at how efficient you have to be. And right, there was a strong sense of kind of like allied health team dynamics really at play with that too. In terms of everything else, I mean, I just had amazing experiences from participating in OYA Talk, Central India's first Stone Talk series, to a community initiative. We raised funds with ISAC to give to the Yoga Dhyanendra Society. And at the time, they were working on the Gandhi Sikhar Lake campaign, and they were unveiling, you know, the Clean the Lake initiative, and unveiling all of the paintings that they had done outside. So there was a lot of community spirit and experience that I had as well. I also stayed with an Indian family. So, you know, when I'd finished my day at work, you could say, I also got to experience, you know, the lovely culture, the amazing food. Yeah, as much as I can't eat spicy food, I think there was a few grilled cheese sandwiches in there from memory. So, but yeah, just it was just in every way, it was a very multifaceted learning experience, and one I'm extremely grateful for.
Right, right. And you mentioned in when you wrote to us about how Dr. Purnima kind of spoke about the importance of understanding the sort of philosophical, spiritual, and cultural underpinnings of mental health practice and treatment response. And, you know, from what you just said, I think the really important point that you brought up was that there isn't kind of this one-size-fits-all approach, right? Like there's different kinds of perspectives that different professionals can bring to this field. So I was just wondering if you know, what sort of things you learned from that perspective, and how you could apply that to your current role at Humanitarian Affairs and Humanitarian Affairs Asia.
You know, firstly, I have to acknowledge how grateful I am for Dr. Poonama's mentorship. You know, despite her busy schedule and me shadowing her around, she still always had time for me to just ask these questions, mm-hmm. Because, you know, to try and build that perspective and understanding. I actually have a book on the teachings of Swami Vivekananda. I said that right.
Yeah.
And his views on personality development, I find extremely fascinating, and in some ways, you know, it sets a very strong foundation. And I still read that. I think I read it recently when I took a flight to my hometown in Queensland. And just being able to see the same topic, you know, on personality and traits and that kind of thing, but from a different point of view, I think it helps me to be more well-rounded. You know, in the future, if I was ever to read a paper on personality, or, you know, and there can be a lot of negative connotation, and, you know, personalities like not being narcissistic and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really opened my mind to things like that. And of course, you know, the just the sense of strong sense of spirituality in Indian culture, and how that shapes things like the understanding the reasons why there is stigma and taboo around the discussions of mental health. I think in one case in the hospital that I interned with, you know, there was some tensions within the family in recognizing that the person that they had brought, who had had schizophrenia, that was actually a mental illness. They had difficulty understanding that. I kind of started to understand that, you know, that there's still those kinds of views on things, and they're neither right nor wrong. They're just framed heavily by background experience and culture. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And Dr. Poornima, if you would, I would love to hear you weigh in on this as well. Kind of incorporating these different perspectives into your practice, how have you found this experience?
Belief system matters a lot.
Right.
The placebo effect, which has something to do with what the person believes in. There can be a positive placebo effect, and there can be a negative placebo effect. So I am a believer in the placebo effect as an additional tool to make the patient better. I see healing as more of a teamwork in India, and the family is equally involved. And we are groomed in an environment of some kind of a spiritual phenomena going around us, awakening, their emotional awakening, taking responsibility for their growth, whether it is for physical healing or for emotional healing. It is important. So in my practice, I try to integrate all this, and in the activities that our NGO conducts, we try to incorporate all this. So when Kimberly was with us, we had four programs. Actually, we had a musical program, we had Unhide, which is not just an open mic, then we had OA Talks, and we also had Splash, the workshop, which is a workshop based on the 10 core skills of emotional intelligence that WHO has said should be present in everybody across cultures and age groups and socioeconomic backgrounds. So these were the four programs that Kimberly had witnessed while she was with us. And she was a very active participant. She was not just an observer, but she was a very, very active participant. Her presence led to the change in flavor of our programs, and which is the power of youth, which is the power of youth who are eager to learn. So providing this foundation of emotional and spiritual fitness, because I feel that is the foundation on which everything else can be constructed. What WHO has said, the World Health Organization has said, for the 10 core skills of life skills, those are the foundation emotional fitness skills. And we have tried to develop all our impact-centric programs around those 10 core skills. About Kimberly, I would like to say that she was a brilliant learner, and she is saying that I have been a good mentor to her, but I was able to be a good mentor to her because she was such a good learner. And she had this fascinating way of creating visual summaries of her work every day, which has stayed with me. So every day there used to be a visual in which she would have noted down all the work she did. And so when a person is so eager to learn, it's a pleasure to be a mentor.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's, I hope I've answered your question.
Definitely. And I really want to thank you for expanding so much on that, because these are really important conversations, and it's really inspiring to hear all these experiences and this perspective that you can offer. And I think it's been great hearing from you. I just wanted to wrap today by asking, in relation to the new Colombo plan, since we're kind of discussing the value of this program through this podcast, how either of you would want to recommend this program to others, and why you would want to recommend it. And in brief, if you would just like to offer a few words.
Great question. New Colombo Plan was life-changing opportunity for me. If I was to summarize it, to recommend it to other people, when it talks about, building professional networks, institutional relationships, it doesn't just stay on your experience. These are long lasting. I have stayed in contact with colleagues from India, from Thailand, from China, from Hong Kong, from Singapore, from all the places that I was able to visit. So, and you keep building that foundation.
The world is a flat place now, and now with the web-based programs happening, we have become shrinking kind of. As far as communication goes, it is easy to communicate. But experiential learning, I feel experiential learning goes a long, long way in making a person what he or she is, for developing a person to his or her fullest potential. And experiential learning will occur only through real life experiences. And one of the best ways, like I changed when I went for my fellowship to Australia. My son was also studying in a school there when he was in third grade. So it changed his perspective. When he saw another culture, he saw he could blend into another culture. I feel that cross-cultural exchanges are fantastic ways of teaching much, much more than technical skills. It teaches you adaptive skills as well, because you change from within. You change as a person. So I'm all for these exchange programs, and I would recommend it to as many people who are interested in challenging their comfort zones and stepping out and gaining a new experience from a different country altogether, a different set of people, different perspectives.